Hello and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
I'm Josh Wallen, and Heil, have you ever been close to tragedy or been close to folks who have? Have you ever felt a pain so powerful, so heavy you collapse?
I'm a Donkey Kong journalist, so yes.
That's a ska reference for you ska heads in the audience.
Ska. We will be talking a little bit about that musical genre tonight. And I say tonight, but it's actually morning. It's midnight local time, Josh. And what special occasion could inspire us to dust ourselves off and begin recording an episode of DK Vine's The Conversation so damned late? Well, it has to be an event so holy, so religiously tinged, that what we're having is, in effect, a midnight mass. Why, it's
an
event...
That's right. I woke up at 7:30 p.m. That's the event.
Well, I'm trying to cover for you, Josh. I'm trying to trying to cover for
Sorry. Thank you. Carry on. Yes, Heil, what is the event?
Your odd schedule notwithstanding, there's but one event that could inspire us to convene as Monday night becomes Tuesday morning, as the clock strives 12, the bewitching hour. It can only be the 20th anniversary of a Donkey Kong Country game. But wait, how does that math work? We just talked about the 20th anniversary of the Game Boy Advance remake for Donkey Kong Country earlier this year. Donkey Kong Country 2's Game Boy Advance remake, that didn't come out until 2004. And Donkey Kong Country Returns, well, that 20th anniversary won't be for another 7 years. What could I possibly be referring to? Well, Josh, well, everyone listening in the live stream, what I'm referring to, it's a bit of a secret. It's a secret Donkey Kong Country game that only the elite know about. You know how rich people have private islands that they fly to that only they know about, and it's kind of their escape. It's like Jeffrey Epstein notwithstanding. Yeah, you know, it's something rich people do, right? Like they have these secret islands.
I have seen Glass Onion. Yes, I know this.
the elite of the world, the jet setters.
Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page.
They fly.
They love Barrel Maze, man. They play it all the time.
They love Cracker Barrel. The elite Donkey Kong fandom, Josh. We have our own secret retreat. It's a secret Donkey Kong Country game that was released in late 2003. Now, late 2003, let me tell you what. DK Vine, as an institution, we were struggling to keep up in late 2003, which, as you all know, was the first full year of the buyout era. And whether we liked it or not, and we didn't, things were rapidly changing from how the video game landscape looked in the 1990s when we were little babies and how it looked then. Rare, of course, was owned by Microsoft. Nintendo was going to be developing Donkey Kong games both internally and with new studios. Grabbed by the Ghoulies had recently come out to middling reviews, low sales, but an enthusiastic reception by us. Mario Kart Double Dash had also just been released, enrapturing some and breaking others' hearts. And I think Josh just revealed where...
You make that comparison and I'm just like, I had bought a GameCube before the buyout happened. I had bought it primarily for a couple of reasons, but one of the biggest was Rare games. So yeah, just thinking, I remember that fall are late this time 20 years ago playing Mario Kart Double Dash and just being and just seeing the DK Fine community having a wonderful time, having a way better time than anyone else seemed to be with Ghoulies, and just being like, God, I wish that were me.
Well, some people like Double Dash, as we just discussed here on The Conversation a couple of episodes back.
Oh, Heil, no they don't.
That was a four-hour spotlight episode. We'll see if we reach that mark on this one.
Good luck.
Speaking of Double Dash, Diddy Kong now had 10 fingers and 10 toes. We had learned about an entirely new adventure that happened to Banjo and Kazooie between Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. But it was set 20 years in the past at the same time. Nintendo and Sega, they were sharing the same bed, Josh.
Weird times.
It was
weird times.
Such a confusing, baffling year. It just, the ground was quaking underneath your feet. But the cherry on top of this ghastly Sunday, the thing that made us fundamentally question the nature of what a Donkey Kong game exactly was, suddenly appeared out of the blue, out of nowhere. Now, there was zero fanfare for this. There was no warning whatsoever. We couldn't hear it coming. And if we could, all we would hear was the incessant blare of the same ska track, repeated over and over across 10 levels. I'm talking about the most forgotten, most overlooked, most confusing game to ever bear the Donkey Kong Country branding. I'm, of course, talking about Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze.
And the midnight seance begins.
So, I think to properly explain what Barrel Maze is, we have to first explain what CandyStand.com was.
Oh my god. I love how there's like levels of obscure. It's like one of those iceberg memes with the DKU, where you've got like your Donkey Kong Country and your Banjo-Kazooie up top, and then somewhere below that you've got like It's Mr. Pants and Saberman, and then beneath the Rare Cow, Hello Freezer, beneath the Game Boy Advance games, beneath Ryan Stiles being a DKU character, there is Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, a game that, if not for DK Vine, I'm sure I never would have heard of, and I imagine the internet itself would have no memory of.
This would have been a game lost to the ages. It's sort of lost at the moment, because we haven't really found a workaround to play Shockwave games in the post-Flash era, but we did preserve it. We'll get into that a little bit. Let's talk first about CandyStand.com. Now, CandyStand.com was the internet's first repository for what I believe are referred to as advert games. Games that are, in effect, just advertisements for brands, usually food. In this case, candy. CandyStand.com was owned by Kraft Foods via their Lifesavers candy brand, and it launched on March 30th, 1997, and it would become...
Man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it would become ubiquitous in school computer labs in the late 90s, but I think especially in the early to mid-aughts. That's really sort of the height of CandyStand.com, where you could play these Shockwave-powered browser games that were very perfunctory, very cheap, very... they were engaging in that they were games you could play on the computer for free, And at ease of access, all you needed was, you know, internet access, a dial-up modem even, and you could play these. So it wasn't out of the realm of accessibility for anyone who had access to a computer, and so they were popular for the time. I think they've since, of course, been displaced by mobile games and their like, and it's very quaint, I would say these games are, especially because their primary purpose was to sell junk food to children. But CandyStand.com sort of blew up, became very popular, and Lifesavers, the stewards of CandyStand, started licensing other properties on CandyStand.com that weren't related to craft foods. And so they started to attract some relatively large IP. So you can come for these cartoon characters that you might like, and then subconsciously really want to suck on a Lifesaver afterwards. So it was still a way to advertise to gullible children, but they got a lot more clever and crafty about it as time went on.
Now, for the gullible children in the audience out there right now, should we explain at all what Shockwave, what Macromedia Shockwave Flash was in layman's terms?
I'm not even sure if I'm qualified to do that. It's beyond my...
I'm definitely not, but I'll try anyway.
Okay.
Macromedia Flash was a browser plugin that basically powered animations and games on the internet in the late 90s through, I would say, like all of the 2000s. It was third-party software. It wasn't like part of the HTTP standard, but it was basically a set of... It was basically just a platform that you could build games and animations on top of. It is now depreciated and has been for some time. Macromedia, Adobe actually ended up owning it. And that was due primarily to, like Kyle said, the rise of mobile gaming, making it a bit redundant. The sort of way that it was never actually compatible with mobile browsers anyway, and as the internet has increasingly moved to mobile, it became quite depreciated. But I will say I definitely miss it. It was a standard in computer labs when I was in school and throughout the 2000s. And in memory of it, I just like to read a line from one of the great, albeit non-ska, poets of our time. In memory of Shockwave: "We download in the Shockwave for all the ladies in the cave to get your groove on." Thank you.
Speaking of companies buying other companies.
Right.
CandyStand.com was eventually purchased by, of all things, Publishers Clearing House in 2016. So CandyStand became PCH Games in 2016, Publishers Clearing House Games. And I feel like we also have to explain what Publishers Clearing House is. Publishers Clearing House is this, and I'm not really qualified to talk about this, I just remember the commercials airing during The Price is Right when I was a kid. They send you old magazines or something, and you would like try to get other people to buy these old magazines, and you could win these big checks, and they would show up at your door with a video camera and say, "Here's $30,000 with this big check," and everybody would go, "Oh my god, oh my god!" And they're like, "Make sure you're home, because Publishers Clearing House might be knocking on your door, and if you're not home, you don't get this money." And I think it was designed to make shut-ins even more afraid to leave the house. Now, common misconception: Ed McMahon is often associated with Publishers Clearing House as the person who would show up with a big check. But in actuality,
we have to explain who Ed McMahon is.
Ed McMahon was Johnny Carson's sidekick on the original, or the Johnny Carson iteration of The Tonight Show, which preceded Jay Leno. Ed McMahon would just be the...
Conversation listeners will know Jay Leno, so that's good. Now I see the connection.
Before Jay Leno, there was Johnny Carson, and before Jay Leno, like, riffed off Kevin Eubanks, who would laugh at his stupid jokes, Ed McMahon would laugh at Johnny Carson's marginally superior jokes. And Ed McMahon also worked for the rival to Publishers Clearinghouse called American Family Publishers. Now, the Ed McMahon commercials were very memorable because it's Ed McMahon showing up at these, you know, Midwesterner's house. And he's like, ah, I'm Ed McMahon. I forget Ed McMahon's voice. I think he was like,
I'm Ed McMahon. No, that's it. You got it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he would say, yes, sir, or something like that. He had like two catchphrases. But people were famous for like basically nothing back then. It's not like today where everybody has to just hustle online and toil and sweat. People could just be a late night sidekick and earn their fame that way. But Ed McMahon never worked for Publishers Clearinghouse, but he's associated with Publishers Clearinghouse because Publishers Clearinghouse had the more memorable brand, but American Family Publishers had the more memorable commercials. And eventually the public just conflated.
And that's how Mandela effects happen.
Yes. Yeah.
People misremember bits and pieces of things. I have the vaguest recollection of these commercials. It was, I guess it was always one of those things where they'd come on and I could very clearly see that it wasn't targeting me. So I just kind of ignored it.
Whereas me, I'm like a sponge. And even if it's not targeting me, I want to know more about it. I'm like, wait, how do these people show up with a big check? What if you're not home?
Eventually developed that. Just not, you know,
yeah,
not at that point. Not yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, like you said, Mandela effect. Ed McMahon never worked for Publishers Clearinghouse, so don't blame him for buying CandyStand.com. He was already dead by that point, and he didn't ever work for them anyway. So
it's not Ed McMahon's fault what happened to Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. It's important that we establish that.
By the way, just speaking to the Mandela effect real quick, you know, I roll my eyes at most of that. I wrote, like, how do you not know Nelson Mandela was the president of South Africa? How do you think he died in prison? I don't understand that. Berenstein Bears, like, you're just, you never examined closely how it was spelled. But the one Mandela effect that blows my mind is the cornucopia in the Fruit of the Loom logo. Because Josh,
that's the one that gets me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it distinctly. And they're telling me now that it never existed. No. I am being gaslit by Fruit of the Loom, and I will not back down from that. Anyway, so.
Because you remember that's how you learned what a cornucopia was in the first place, right?
Exactly. That's how we all learned. That's how 90s kids learned what a cornucopia was, and that's why nobody knows what a cornucopia is today, because the timeline shifted.
That one gets me, and Dilemma gets me. I remember a teacher's aide in about third grade telling me that the word dilemma had an N in it. And it doesn't. It's D-I-L-E-M-M-A. But she told me D-I-L-E-M-N-A. And I'm not alone on that one either.
I think that's just like Dan Quayle telling school children how potato is spelled with an E at the end. And I think that you were just told incorrect information, Josh.
Speaking of Carson bits.
Yeah, so CandyStand.com, we just told you who owned it, but it was actually a venture of the company that developed Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. So Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze was developed by the original minds behind CandyStand.com, Skyworks Technologies Incorporated, which eventually took on the name of Skyworks Interactive. It was a studio founded in, some sources say 1995, some sources say 1996. I lean towards 1995 through my research. But it was founded by Gary Kitchen. And I always think they founded this in Gary's kitchen, but his name is Gary Kitchen. Maybe they came up with the idea in Gary Kitchen's kitchen, but I don't know.
That doesn't mean they didn't found it there.
Yeah, like maybe they were sitting in Gary Kitchen's kitchen by the candy jar and they were like, wait a second.
God, whenever I hear somebody who has a name like that, I'm just like, God, I bet they get sick of hearing that joke. I feel bad for them. Gary Kitchen, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Gary Kitchen's partner was David Crane, the same name as the son of Niles and Daphne from off of Frasier, and I think is a character in the god-awful Frasier revival. But anyway, David Crane and Gary Kitchen founded Skyworks Interactive and founded CandyStand.com. I guess they went to... I don't know how they made this pitch to Kraft Foods, or if they like bounced around different corporate boardrooms saying, this is how you advertise your product for the 21st century audience. But they eventually reached a deal with Kraft Foods and founded CandyStand.com. Now, in addition to many of the games on CandyStand.com, Skyworks also was responsible for numerous mobile titles and games on various platforms. Games like South Park's Pinball, Texas Hold'em Poker on the Game Boy Advance, that's right, Texas Hold'em Poker DS on the Nintendo DS, you're hearing me correctly, Kong, King of Atlantis on the Game Boy Advance. Well, they had the pedigree. Obviously, they were qualified to make that one. Their last credited game was Boardwalk Ball Toss for the Nintendo DSi in 2011. And then the company just fell off the radar. I assume they're defunct. I don't know. They haven't been credited for a game since Boardwalk Ball Toss in 2011.
Yeah, but Retro Studios hasn't been credited since 2014, so there's still a chance.
Do you think Skyworks Interactive is helping develop Metroid Prime 4?
No, I think they're working on Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze Returns. That's my dream.
We'll sleep on that one, Josh, and come back to it. So, the original Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze was authorized by Nintendo in 2003 to help promote the recent release of the aforementioned Game Boy Advance remake of Donkey Kong Country. But very little is known about the origins of how this all came about. Did Skyworks approach Nintendo with his offer? Did Nintendo decide to license these outside browser games to promote their own published games? I don't really know. All I do know is that this was the only time this was done for Donkey Kong. So it was just kind of the right place at the right time. They had a product. They had a willing partner in Skyworks. They had a hot platform like CandyStand. And they said, we're going to try this. Maybe if kids go to CandyStand.com, in addition to wanting to suck on the delicious sweet treats of Kraft Foods, they'll also want to suck on our delicious sweet Donkey Kong treat on the Game Boy Advance. This is before they started making the game cartridges just taste terrible. This is back when you could suck on them with reckless abandon, Josh.
You could, yeah. Actually, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
The newer Switch games are not nearly as spicy as the original ones. I have noticed that.
I haven't tasted them in quite a while, but I thank you for bringing the spicy parlance into one of your episodes and not just making it the sole domain of Mitchell Wolf.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an unintentional reference to MF Wolf, but
yeah,
he did a great job last episode. Props to him.
Speaking of which, Mitchell is in our live stream. I want to give a shout out to our live stream right now. We do live stream most conversations for our $5 and up patrons. We got crowds tonight, this midnight mass. A lot of people have shown up with candles to celebrate Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. You already mentioned Freezer. Hello to Cornhorn22, Lawful Poe. We got...
Yeah, those are my people in particular.
Yeah, your people. We got Sales. Yeah, they're on your side of the church. We got Porygon Q on my side. We'll check in with the live stream as we go, but you mentioned that Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze would be forgotten if it weren't for DK Vine, and I don't like to blow smoke up our ass all that much. I just don't like to do it, but you're absolutely correct in this case, Josh. because Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze would have been forgotten as soon as it was delisted on CandyStand.com if DK Vine did not have the foresight to illegally preserve it from CandyStand.com while it was still live and active. So you could actually
Was it illegal?
I assume it was illegal. It was not our property and we stole it.
Well, it's kind of like downloading an NFT, isn't it? I mean...
Well, yeah, but...
You just downloaded the Flash file. I think you're good. Now, rehosting it on your own site, that might be the iffy part. True. But I don't think they're going to get you.
I don't think they're going to come after us because we didn't really start advertising it on our main site until after it was gone from CandyStand.com. I was like, well, here's this piece of lost media that we had the foresight to preserve. And, you know, we have a old game page for it. You can still download it on DKVine.com, although you will have to figure out your own workaround with the death of Flash. There are presumably ways to play it. At the very least, we have the file. It's not something like Dr. Mario World, where it's just gone. And there's just no hope of recovering it unless somebody at Nintendo does some extremely shady shit. And I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping somebody loses their job over it because we need lost media preserved. But I don't actually want somebody to lose their job over it. I hope they're already on their way out and they just, you know, burn their bridges. But we have Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze preserved, and we have been, I mean, the only source online to find this game. We're the only ones who have talked about it for several years up until the point where somebody did an extensive article for it on Super Mario Wiki, which sort of legitimized it a little bit more beyond us just shouting at the moon that this game exists. But yeah, I think we kept the torch alive for Barrel Maze long past the point where it was extinguished at CandyStand.com.
Now, this is the origin of it. It really is quite interesting because I remember, you know, specific Nintendo games would have like tie-in Flash games, but those would tend to be hosted on Nintendo.com. Do we know if this site, if this third-party site, ever had any other games based on Nintendo properties or IPs?
Josh, I didn't even know what the world's biggest Pokemon fan site was called until the last episode. You're asking the wrong person here.
Cleffa's Wigglytuff Pokemon Bonanza. I know what it's called. Come on.
I just shut out anything that isn't DKU related. My brain can only hold so much space, and a shocking portion of it is housing Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze information. So I don't know. I know CandyStand.com did have like a partnership with Nintendo Wii when that was new, but I don't know if there were any other licensed Nintendo games on CandyStand.com.
The reason I ask, because if the partnership continued,
yeah,
then that would seem to indicate that Barrel Maze was successful at what it set out to do.
I don't know if it was successful what it set out to do. I mean, Donkey Kong Country for the Game Boy Advance was extremely successful. We've already talked about that this season on The Conversation, where the success of that game helped buoy the internal recognition of Donkey Kong Country at Nintendo and ultimately made them decide that was the direction Donkey Kong needed to take through that, you know, a decade of identity crisis after the Rare buyout, where they weren't really sure if that was the direction Donkey Kong was going to continue forward, or if they were going to reinvent it with like Jungle Beat, or if they were going to go for a more arcade era throwback or what. They were just trying everything. And
so then is it safe to say, in your estimation, that without Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, the buyout era never ends?
Probably not, because...
Is this the linchpin?
I feel like this came out probably too late to make a sizable impact on the sales of DKCGB. I'm sure someone out there learned about the existence of Donkey Kong Country for the Game Boy Advance thanks to Barrel Maze, but I would imagine those people who actually got roped in by this game, you could probably count them on two hands, maybe just one. And maybe not even.
Yeah,
with
then they go by the GBA game. They're mad because it's nothing like Barrel Maze. They're like, what is this shit?
Yeah, that
side scrolling left to right. What?
My Donkey Kong is Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. Thank you very much.
Oh man.
So there's no way to measure what impact this actually had. Obviously, they didn't do one for Donkey Kong Country 2. We can tell you that much. But it's a curious case of a tie-in game. And like you said, Nintendo would often have flash games for... Going back to the N64 releases, they would have these really cheap flash games that would just reuse renders and other assets from said game itself. They'd be very perfunctory. They would be very just basic, barely games at all. But this was a game, right? There were original assets created for this. There was a bit of polish. It was rough around the edges for sure, but it actually played like its own unique thing, and it wasn't just this diversion on a website, to the point where it had a ESRB rating, which most of these Flash games did not, in fact, have. This was rated E for everyone by the ESRB, and this is what tipped DKVine off, like, hey, is this actually a real video game? Because, like I said, this was a very confusing era where we had to start redefining what our assumptions had been, because the video game industry was changing at a rapid pace, and suddenly we had this game. We thought we knew what a video game was, and then we had this browser-based game with an ESRB rating that had original assets and had Donkey Kong in it. Was this an actual Donkey Kong game? And we ultimately decided, yeah, it actually is, which has led to some contention. Well, if this, why not this game? Or why not that game? And I'll get into that towards the end of the episode, because I really want to focus on Barrel Maze before we get into the also-rans, the Mamie games that came in Barrel Maze's wake.
Now, for my part, I do feel a responsibility to bring up something at this point.
Yeah.
I do agree, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze is a real video game, it is a real Donkey Kong game, and it is really a part of the DKU. I take no issue with that. However, I don't think it's because it was rated by the ESRB, because, and this might blow your mind, I did not discuss this with Heil before this episode, I don't believe it was rated by the ESRB.
You don't believe
If you go on the ESRB's website,
If
you go on the ESRB's website, you can do a full search for any game that they've ever rated. And unfortunately, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze is not there. So I believe the ESRB rating on the game's like title screen was referring to the game that it itself was advertising, Donkey Kong Country, for the Game Boy Advance.
Which is incredibly duplicitous on CandyStand.com's part, then, on Skyworks Technologies' part, if that is indeed the case. Because they're using the ESRB rating for the game that they're promoting, which is not mentioned on Barrel Maze's title screen, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying this is rated E, completely ignoring the full frontal nudity in level 8.
Well, nobody, except for you, including the people who made the game, probably ever made it to level 8 to see that.
That's right. And, you know, when Funky Kong just walked out in a bathrobe and disrobed, I mean, that's where I always got a game over, because I just lost control of the barrel right then and there. And,
That's how Candy Kong described it, too.
Yeah. I'm gaslighting you. There's no full frontal nudity in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. It could be rated E for everyone if it, in fact, got an ESRB rating. I think you may be correct. However, if this is, in fact, a Fanon ESRB rating, I'm fine with that, too, because the guts it takes to just slap an ESRB rating on your product... And think, yeah, That'll do. I almost admire
That's
it.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get away with it now, but in the Wild West days of the internet, sure. Sure, why not? No, I agree. A game does not have to have an ESRB or PEGI rating to have official DKU status. That was a justification given on 2003 DK Vine, but I think it's a whole lot of nonsense. I think we have to just look at
what... A pegging rating would be for King of Swing.
That's right, that's right. I think we have to look at what just... what goes into a game versus whether it's... And of course, everybody's going to have their different criteria for where a game begins and where a just interactable, promotionable, like, gimmick thing on a website ends. Like, it's a fine line, is what I'm saying. By virtue of...
Yeah, because you're right. I'm looking at the loading and title screen right now. That the E for Everyone rating is... By all, like, if you didn't know better,
yeah,
basically, there's no reason you'd think that it doesn't refer to this game that you're looking at.
Yeah. And, you know, the difference is this was on CandyStand.com. This wasn't on the Donkey Kong Country website, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just elevated slightly above some of these other games. Like the Donkey Kong 64 trivia game that you could play on the Donkey Kong 64 website. I think this is just a kind of a step above those. And some people may quibble with, well, if you include this, you should include those. But we can definitely include this because this is a real game, Josh. This is fully developed. It's got 10 levels. It's got original assets. And I would argue... It has an original story. Now, okay, when I say an original story, there is no plot. There is no actual plot to Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. But I believe, as I often do, that one can easily be surmised by observing the gameplay. And what is the gameplay of Barrel Maze, you may ask, the majority of people who have never played Barrel Maze. Josh, would you like to explain it? Because I've talked so much internally to myself about Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. I've talked so much about Barrel Maze on the DK Vine forum, on social media over the years. But very rarely do I have the opportunity to sit back and let someone talk to me about Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. And I would really love to just hear it from your mouth. If you don't have a Nintendo cartridge in there right now, explain to me.
All right,
how you play Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze.
Okay, so full disclosure, part of this is just going off of memory.
Okay, I can step in and help you out if you stumble.
Okay, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze is. What would the genre even be described as?
Isometric.
Okay. You play as a rolling barrel on its side from an isometric perspective. You move the barrel around the playfield using, I believe, your keyboard's arrow keys.
That's correct.
The barrel reacts somewhat realistically to the terrain and physics of the environment. There are ramps, there are launchers. So the idea is you can roll quote unquote downhill, and I say downhill, but like all the terrain is at a very like specific angle. There are no curves, there are only pivots in the terrain. But you can roll over basically ramps and launch your barrel down slopes and off of obstacles, and there are, for example, hippopotamuses that pop in and out of rushing rapids, and your goal in each level is to roll your barrel around this isometric environment, picking up bananas and bringing them to Donkey Kong, who was waiting at the end. And when you do this, he does a celebratory dance and Diddy Kong swings in on a vine from the side. The game is punishing, however, in that you have a limited a very limited stock of lives. The controls themselves are very, very sensitive, and the isometric perspective makes it very easy to roll the barrel off of cliffs if you're not extremely, extremely careful. And there are also other hazards, such as rolling boulders and the aforementioned hippos who pop in and out of the water, so you have to sort of time that. Have I gotten most of it, would you say?
I would say those are the broad basics. So, the barrel that you control, you go through 10 stages, and I would say these stages are a treacherous series of canyons in the Congo jungle. Now, the barrel can only withstand so much damage because it is a barrel.
Right.
And each level is on a timer. The times for each level can range from as long as 5 minutes, as level one gives you, all the way to a perilous 30 seconds to complete a level. Now, more time can be earned by collecting hourglass collectibles, but yes, you have less and less time as the game progresses to complete these far more difficult levels.
And I would say it very quickly ramps up in difficulty.
Yes, especially when they add even more ramps. So you have to reach Donkey Kong, who's waiting at the goal of every level. Like, there's a little checkered platform that Donkey Kong, an actual model of Donkey Kong. And I haven't been able to determine if this is an original model of Donkey Kong or if it was borrowed from a pre-existing game like Mario Party 4 or something.
It animates very jerkily. It looks like it's taken from like cutout screenshots of some sort of a GameCube era game. Yeah.
It looks better than any other Kong in the game, which we'll get to. But yeah, you got to reach Donkey Kong at the end of the level. You got to beat all the levels. And also, you can try to get the high score for bragging rights, I guess. There's really no benefit to getting the high score. By the end of it, I didn't give a damn about my score. I just wanted to beat the game, beat the levels, and say, I beat Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. And that's it. That's the game. Again, it's a Shockwave game from 2003 that was on a website used to promote the Lifesavers candy brand. So you're not going to get Breath of the Wild here, right? You're not going to get something that is this groundbreaking, genre-busting testament to game design.
Oh, Breath of the Wild wishes it could be this.
Yeah, we'll put that on the t-shirt, Josh, and we'll credit it to Josh Wallen from Off of the Geek Critique.
Now, I'm also, you talk about the damage meter. I will say your damage meter is represented on the HUD by a banana that turns red. But I do notice that damage meter drains from things that, like, you have to do in the regular course of completing a level. For instance, when you roll over rough terrain, that increments the damage meter. When you fall from basically any height at all, that takes some of your damage meter. So you really do have to be very careful in how you navigate and time the rolling of your barrel through these levels.
Yes, and as you already mentioned, you control the barrel using the arrow keys on your keyboard. So left, up, down, right. So you don't have a varied, like, in-depth control scheme. It's very, very rudimentary, and that makes it very, very frustrating, especially because it's excruciatingly sensitive, Josh. Like, it doesn't take much to get this barrel moving. And that means it doesn't take much to get the barrel careening off the edge to its smashing defeat. And then there's another life wasted. So, this game kicked my ass in 2003, let me tell you. I did not beat it until 2010. Long after it was on candystand.com, but after we preserved it on DK Vine, I was able to defeat it with the benefit of 7 years of age and wisdom and learned patience coming right.
And the excitement for the upcoming release of DKC Returns.
So I beat it after DKC Returns had come out. I went to Barrel Maze right after I beat Mario Kart Double Dash. And Mario Kart Double Dash was, of course, another grueling slog for me because, as I already mentioned, infamously, I forced myself to complete all of Double Dash using Donkey and Diddy Kong in the DK Jumbo, just the absolute worst possible combination of characters and vehicle in the game. And after that, I was like, yeah, I can do anything. And so I sat down and I beat Barrel Maze.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the basic gameplay of Barrel Maze. How can you glean a plot from that is the question.
And we should also say, when we talk about your high score, the other collectible in the game appears to be gold and silver barrels.
Right.
Which increment your score.
Yeah.
So, again, like you said, I see why you said that you just didn't give a shit about your score very quickly, because trying to get those inevitably will lead to you losing more lives, which will lead to you not, once again, having to start the game all the way over. Because it is one of those games. There are no continues.
There is no candy save point in this. There's no Kong College or save cave. There's no automatic saving. It's you lose all your lives, you have to start from the beginning. It feels very, like, arcade-y, where, oh, yeah.
It does.
You really want to get a high score. I was like, why do I want to get a high score? I want to beat the game. Well, you got to get a high score. That's what a video game is. I'm not going to do that.
Like most Shockwave games of this era, I'm quite sure that this game is based on a mishmash of 80s era arcade games.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's as hard as an 80s era arcade game. Thankfully, it's only 10 levels, and there's no, like, Donkey Kong arcade style, we're just going to start you over in the beginning, and it's going to be even harder, how far can you get, or it's like Super Mario Brothers, you know, like, none of that, none of what Cranky Kong says, you know, and then you beat it, and they make you start over from the beginning, like, none of that. It's once you're done, you're done. You can play it again, but who cares?
This would likely be one of Cranky Kong's favorite DKU games, though.
I think out of all the Donkey Kong Country games, he would like this one up until Tropical Freeze, which that would be his favorite because he's playable in that one. Because he's a hypocrite, right? All he cares about really is his own glory. And that's why he's cranky, because he was forced into retirement. So saying all of that, how can you possibly squeeze any semblance of story out of this? How can I, the lore fanatic for the Donkey Kong universe, say, you know what was a good time thinking about it on an intellectual level? Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. Like, I know I'm a ridiculous human being, Josh, but do I not have my limits? And yes, I have my limits, but apparently DKC BM, which terrible, terrible abbreviation there. Apparently, this BM didn't cause me to strain all that hard, because I have figured out some semblance of a fan and plot for this game. Now, we control a barrel, right? We go around and we collect bananas. And in fact, when you get to Donkey Kong at the end of every level, the barrel is then flipped right side up, and Donkey Kong digs the bananas out of the barrel. So, very logically, I said to myself, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze is the previously unseen story of how Donkey Kong actually goes about collecting the bananas for his banana hoard. Because he just has a cave full of bananas, Josh. We never know how he actually procures these. I mean, it seems like it's a lot of work, right? So, he's dropped into dangerous territory in the Congo jungle. And with the help of what I call the remote control barrel, or the RCB, He collects banana bunches as well as other treasures along the way, facing obstacles, maybe the intervention of the Kremlings now living on Donkey Kong Island, and much more. It's a day in the life of Donkey Kong, the closest thing we see to him working for a living outside of going on these massive adventures. That's my fanon plot of Barrel Maze.
I mean, honestly, that doesn't even sound like an extrapolation to me. I mean, it's all right there on the page, Kyle. That is obviously and clearly exactly what is happening and what the intent of this adventure always was.
That's exactly what Gary Kitchen and David Crane wanted us to take away from this game. And the fact that they're able to communicate that through the simple elegance of their arrow key devised gameplay shows why they were able to get Nintendo on board with this in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the pitch meeting would have been so easy. I bet Nintendo was kicking themselves saying, why didn't we think of that?
Yes, and I bet they're scrambling now to devise a candy stand edition for Nintendo Switch Online. You know, Nintendo Switch Online plus candy stand to preserve this classic game from the comfort of your home console. I realize
they would have to release a keyboard peripheral for the Switch, though. I mean, that could, like, I refuse to play this game without the intended keyboard controls.
The fact that they released a Super Nintendo controller, an N64 controller, and even a Sega Genesis controller, Josh, shows me that they're not above releasing, you know, like an old iMac keyboard for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yeah, would have to be authentic. My pick would be getting one of those cheap-ass black keyboards by partnering with Dell.
They could even bring in the dude, you're getting a Dell guy from the vintage
commercials. Dude, we were on the same page there. I was about to say that.
Oh, my God. I would love to watch that guy.
It's all there.
I would love to watch that guy play Barrel Maze. That would just be the culmination of all my life's work right there. So I realize we're losing the audience here, right? We're speaking in tongues at our midnight mass. This is nonsense to most people, especially those people who have not played the game. I'm hoping we're articulating this enough for those who weren't there. Now, this wouldn't be a conversation spotlight without celebrating the characters of Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. And there are characters in this game. This would not be a DKU game if we did not have physical appearances of pre-existing characters. Just like, as you mentioned, Ryan Stiles, from Whose Line Is It Anyway, is actually a native DKU character because he made his video game debut in Conker Live and Reloaded's demo disc.
Oh, he's more than a character. He is a DK Vine Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's on his Wikipedia page and everything.
He made it in before Donkey Kong himself.
Yeah, it's
true. That's just how important he is.
Yes, he's very important, yeah. So, let's talk about the characters of Barrel Maze. And of course, we need to talk about the RCB, the remote controlled barrel.
Sure.
The RCB is what you, the player, sees most of the time. However, as I said, we can assume that Donkey Kong is actually the one controlling this barrel in-universe. He's at the end of the level in the safe zone that he's been dropped off in with a remote control, trying to steer this barrel in the dangerous terrain, getting the bananas along the way. Now, the timer on each level, I assume, is the battery pack for the RCB. And so when you start, you know, the RCB has 5 minutes of battery life. This was 2003, you know. I mean, it sucks up battery life more than a Game Gear did, all right? But as you go on, it has less and less battery life. But, you know, and so Donkey Kong's task becomes all the harder.
Now, I would assume, though, that the battery life can be explained even better, because honestly, mobile batteries were getting pretty good by 2003, but they were not very good in 1993. So in line with what you were saying earlier about this game depicting the events of how Donkey Kong got the Banana Horde in the first place, this must take place before the events of Donkey Kong Country.
I think this takes place in 2003 for reasons I will get into
in
just a little bit. But no, I think while battery life surely did improve by 2003, the Kongs are always going off of slightly more archaic technology. We see in Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze that they actually scavenge a lot of technology from the outside world via plane crashes, shipwrecks, boat wrecks, and the like. And so, plus, I assume Donkey Kong's been at this for quite a while, and so this is probably older technology that maybe was devised in 1993, but he's still using a decade later. So, you know, just like your phone's battery life degrades over time, so too does the RCB.
And this probably goes without saying, but we believe the RCB was developed by Funky Kong.
Of course, that goes without saying. In fact, I would argue that Funky Kong is one of the characters in this game, even though we never see him. More on that in just a bit. Because the character we do see right next to Donkey Kong, you already mentioned him, is Diddy Kong. Now, Diddy Kong has a very minimal role in this game. It's more of a just cameo, literally a drop-in appearance. Now, Diddy appears on the title screen. He appears on the loading screen. But they're always just renders repurposed from Donkey Kong 64. Donkey Kong 64 was still the most recent art assets like that were in play. Obviously, renders from Donkey Kong, renders for Donkey Kong Country for the Game Boy Advance were in actuality renders from Donkey Kong 64. Like the box art was just DK64 renders of Donkey and Diddy, and thus two renders of Diddy seen in Barrel Maze are just repurposed renders from Donkey Kong 64. The in-game appearance of Diddy dropping in on a rope is just a render of him hanging on a rope. But
Looking at it, it almost appears to be, but because what happens is when he comes in, it goes with this very cheap flash motion tweening effect that causes his, as the rope swings back and forth, his body sort of lightly moves in a very unappealing and uncanny way. So
yeah, Diddy does the quivering thing you have to do to be Canary Mary and Banjo-Tooie, where you just have to start trembling your whole lower arm, and Diddy just kind of starts jerking uncomfortably. Phrasing, I know. So this render of Diddy drops down, which is representative of Diddy actually being there in game, and as Donkey Kong digs out, as this nebulous model of Donkey Kong, presumably from a GameCube game, digs out this banana bunch from the barrel, Diddy drops down on the rope, just from the sky. And I like to think that Funky has airlifted Donkey Kong into these dangerous regions of the Congo, and Diddy's tagging along in the barrel plane, and then he drops down on the rope, and Donkey Kong's successful, and he's like, "Hey, Donkey! Hey, DK! Grab this rope! Let's go! Let's get out of here!" And Donkey Kong picks up the RCB.
And then they get airlifted to the next level.
Yeah. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, note, Josh, that Diddy's Donkey Kong 64 render physically being in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze means this is an unusual occurrence. This is a post-Mario Golf Toadstool Tour appearance of Diddy where he's not wearing the prosthetic golfing fingers.
That's true. They did not repurpose the art asset to add that.
No. So we can only assume that he just didn't bring him along this day. This is when they were still new and he wasn't, he was like, "Oh, I'm not going to wear them this day. We're just going out getting bananas for the Horde. I don't need to wear my prosthetic golfing fingers and toes. And so...
It takes time to break them in, yeah.
It does. And now, you know, you see him with them all the time. You never not see Diddy wearing those prosthetic golfing fingers. But I think this is our canon evidence of the existence of prosthetic golfing fingers. Because I've had some people argue to me, well, you know, Heil, this is stupid. This notion that Diddy puts on these like golfing gloves that give him an extra digit on each hand and foot. And what are you saying? Like, he still has his like original four fingers on each hand underneath these? No, this is just a retcon. Diddy never had four fingers. He's always supposed to have five fingers. And I say, explain his appearance in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, which takes place immediately after Mario Kart Double Dash. You can't do it unless you subscribe to the theory, and I think confirm fact, of prosthetic golfing fingers.
Yeah. Heil, you in your position... as DK Vine editor-in-chief, you can't say this, so I will say this for you. Anyone who tells you that prosthetic golfing fingers are stupid can go fuck themselves. Just go fuck yourself. The evidence, as you said, is right here. It's right here on the screen.
I would say to go do that because it's an important part of any sexual health. You know, have at it, but...
Sure, yeah.
I would just say look at the evidence. And if you say it's nonsense, you have not looked at the evidence as closely as I have. Because I've looked at Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. I've stared into its soul, Josh. And I walk away knowing the truth about Diddy Kong.
Now, I would also put forth the possibility that at least on some of these levels, perhaps Diddy Kong is up in the barrel plane. And he, in fact, is the one that sometimes is controlling the remote control barrel.
That's
and
possible.
Perhaps he just found, because he was used to it, that using the remote control was easier without the prosthetic golfing fingers.
Now, what that would mean is we have to do a follow-up episode at some point. We have to go back through Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze and figure out which levels were plausibly controlled by Donkey Kong piloting the RCB and which levels were Diddy at the controls of the RCB if they were, in fact, switching off.
And I will be happy to do that episode, but for now, we should probably stay focused on what we've already got, because that could be a whole topic unto itself.
And we haven't done the research, unfortunately. We just haven't done it.
Right, right.
Cranky Kong. Cranky Kong makes an appearance in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. However, he only appears on the title screen, on the game over screen, and on the end of game victory screen. And the render... Mm-hmm. is from Donkey Kong Country. It's just him in his rocking chair. So I assume they went with the Donkey Kong Country era render because there were no renders for Cranky Kong from Donkey Kong 64. And the one from Donkey Kong Country 2 is not in a rocking chair. And a static render of a rocking chair is far easier to quasi-animate in Flash than him mm-hmm. wobbling around on two canes.
That all checks out, but the question that I have then is, what's he doing up there?
I think Cranky, like, maybe came along with him that day, but he didn't want to fly around in the barrel plane, so he's been dropped off at, like, the departure point to reach this canyonous region of the Congo jungle, because he's up on kind of like a cliffside overlooking a jungle here, and so he's just there to like watch them take off and wish them well and greet them upon their return and maybe rub it in Donkey Kong's face that he didn't get as many bananas as he would have gotten had he been out there with the RCB.
Now, we have seen, for example, in the credits of Donkey Kong Country 1, that Cranky's rocking chair appears to be mobile at least to some degree, as in he can rock back and forth across the screen during the character parade at the end of the game. So it's also possible that he knows this mountainous region very well himself, and I would postulate perhaps he is helping to guide them through it.
Although I would argue how much in canon those character parades are, considering that would imply that all the characters can just like moonwalk very easily and the aquatic...
And or fit in Donkey Kong's treehouse.
Yeah, yeah, the aquatic characters can just float through the air without the need of any water whatsoever. So, I always take those with a grain of salt. They're more representative than anything else. But, sure. Yeah, I'm sure Cranky Kong can move a fair amount of distance in his rocking chair. He's probably skilled at it. If he can bounce on his cane, I'm sure gliding about in his rocking chair isn't that far off from plausibility. Well, there aren't any animal buddies in this game, but you did mention the hippos, and I feel like the hippos are worth kind of giving a little bit of shine to, because these are the first time hippos appear in a Donkey Kong game. Minus, of course, Scoff from off of Donkey Kong 64, the nipple-piercing enthusiast.
Minus Ska?
Scoff. Not Ska. Stop thinking about your favorite musical genre, Josh. I'm talking about the nipple-piercing enthusiast, Scoff, partner of
Trough. You can see why I would have Ska on the brain, though.
Yes, of course. I have the damn song on repeat in my brain. I can't get it out of my brain after compiling my show notes, after doing all the research for this episode. It's going to be in there when I try to go to bed after we're done with this midnight recording.
And you'll have no trouble going to sleep. You'll just drift off with the gentle, relaxing sound of that one ska song just on repeat forever and ever.
Yeah, as I imagine the RCB shattering time and time again. Rolling off a cliff,
oh, yes.
Or getting pelted with a coconut. The hippos, these are, unironically, I think my favorite aspect of Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. I absolutely adore the hippos, because this is the first time that we have seen wild hippos in a Donkey Kong game. Like I said, Scoff was a character, but Scoff was more of the cartoony, like, Professor Chops vein of anthropomorphic animal, whereas these hippos read to me more like your Rambies, your Engards. They're more wild animals on Donkey Kong Island, and they're just chilling in the river scene in level 2 and level 8 of Barrel Maze. And I just love the way they look. We only see them from, again, it's isometric, so we only see them from the top. But just the way they look, it's so gloriously shiny. Like, they're just wet, wet hippos. And they don't look out of place in the world of Donkey Kong. They look like if we could see their eyes, which we can't see, I would imagine they would look quite a bit like the Bopomotamus from Donkey Kong Country Returns, which were the hippos that appeared as part of, like, the brainwashed animal army of the Tiki Tak tribe that Donkey and Diddy could bounce on the heads of to cross great platforms. The hippos in this game serve a very similar function. You can use them to cross the river, but you have to be quick because they go back down and then they come back up for air.
Now, I do notice that these hippos always come in pairs of two.
That's
right. You never see a single hippo. Do you think that, in terms of the gameplay, that's so that the barrel sprite, which is quite wide, can sensibly pass over them. Do you think in-universe these hippos are pair-bonded in some way?
I do. I think these hippos
are,
when the barrel's not there, just having the most vigorous sex you can ever imagine.
That would explain why there are so many of them in those levels.
But unfortunately, Josh, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze was either rated E by the ESRB or was falsified as E by the ESRB. And so they had to cut the full-on hippo intercourse. And what a shame that was.
I mean, that does help explain, though, why the hippos are so lovingly rendered and why their skin is so shiny. They're damp with perspiration.
They spent more time getting the glisten on the hippos just right than they did making sure the barrel could control properly. But I appreciate the art direction nonetheless.
That's not really important.
No. I love these hippos, Josh. Whenever I think about Barrel Maze, the very first thing that comes to my mind was, those are pretty great hippos. Because you know me.
They are. They legitimately are.
I love looking at the wildlife of Donkey Kong Island. It's why, like, the Banjo-Kazooie-fication of Donkey Kong, starting with Donkey Kong 64, kind of rankles me a little bit, because it just feels tonally out of place for what Donkey Kong was prior to that. And yes, Banjo-Kazooie takes place in the same shared universe as Donkey Kong. I love Banjo-Kazooie, but I didn't want those elements brought into a mainline Donkey Kong game. Diddy Kong Racing is fine, because that's a Diddy Kong game. But Donkey Kong 64, all of a sudden we have beetles racing you, and rabbits racing you, and owls racing you. And I'm just like, all right. Like, I was fine with simians. I was fine with kremlins. I was fine with bears. But now it's getting a little ridiculous. But I just love animal buddies that, you know, are basically just wild animals that the Kongs have befriended that almost act as, like, their exotic pets. You know, Rambi is a big dog. And I like that element of Donkey Kong that I feel like has been lost since 1999. And so the notion of wild hippos, an animal type we never saw during the Rare era, except for the aforementioned nipple-piercing enthusiast, I really like it. I think it adds a lot to Donkey Kong's world, to Donkey Kong Island, to say that there are hippos in the river. So, yeah. They're my favorite aspect.
And more broadly, Barrel Maze does have a fairly, I guess, as realistic an aesthetic as you would expect a Flash game from 2003 that is basically advertising candy and a Game Boy Advance tie-in game. As much as it could be expected to have. Because, yeah. Yes, the hippos are realistic, the textures are fairly realistic.
Yeah,
there's nothing here that's breaking too far away from the established pre-DK64 Donkey Kong Country aesthetic.
Yeah, when I said that the elites of Donkey Kong fandom escaped Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze and we don't need our own fancy private islands, it's because the nature presented in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze is so realistic, we have no need to seek it out in real life.
But I will say, though, I noticed the hippos are not the only wildlife that appear in the game.
They're not. There are some recognizable characters that appear in Barrel Maze. There are the enemies of DKC-BM. And let's start with the true antagonist of the RCB, Josh. Let's talk about the bad remote control barrels. This is just conjecture. There's no official name for these. I also call these the Kremlin remote control barrels. These are kind of, they look like oil drums almost, but they're just like, I think they're barrels painted black, but they've got a skull and crossbones design on the top, which kind of evokes the character of Dum Drum, the boss from Donkey Kong Country. The skull and crossbones is also evocative of both the Kremlin Jolly Roger, seen on the pirate faction of Kremlins in DKC2, Donkey Kong Land 2, and Donkey Kong 64, but also the Kremlin skull insignia that would debut in the Paon era and appear throughout numerous things represented by the Kremlins in those games, including their clothing. So, yeah, I think these are Kremlin remote control barrels that the Kremlins now living on Donkey Kong Island after the events of DKC2, of course. They're kind of being antagonistic towards Donkey Kong. They want these bananas too, and rather than just trying to steal from his hoard again, they're trying to just cut him off at the source and trying to get some banana bunches of their own.
I do notice that these barrels, what they appear to try to do is they'll roll toward you and attempt to knock you into the rapids or knock you off of cliffs.
Yeah.
I do notice that they don't appear to understand how to interface with the hippos, because once you get far enough away from them, they seem to just spin out. So perhaps it is the case that the hippos do not like the Kremlings and would not allow them to pass.
No, well, I'm sure there are many Kremlins who have adapted to life on Donkey Kong Island in the Congo jungle and are good neighbors. Because not all Kremlins are part of the Kremlin crew. This is important, right? There are some Kremlins who are good-natured, who want nothing to do with King K. Rool's machinations. And so they're living their life. Some Kremlins just want nothing to do with it. We know Calypso opened a nightclub on Donkey Kong Island. It's kind of a haven for Kremlin refugees. But there are still people, there are still Kremlins who subscribe to K. Rool's philosophies and who very much are there to be a thorn in the Kong side. And I'm sure the wildlife of Donkey Kong Island, they don't care for them. They don't care for these Kremlins who are not living in harmony with the ways of the Congo. So, yeah. Hippos are gonna sink the Kremlin RCBs. Now, that's conjecture, of course. We don't know that the Kremlins are actually controlling those barrels. But there is a familiar Donkey Kong baddie that explicitly appears in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. Nekis, the famous vultures from Donkey Kong Country and Donkey Kong Country 2 and Donkey Kong 64, kind of, and King of Swing and, you know, Paon's games, they appear in levels 3, 8, and 9. And they fly overhead, and they look like Nekis, but they kind of, it's hard to tell if they're supposed to be Nekis or if they're just basic buzzards or vultures, but we know they're Nekis because
they look like they might have some, they might think about maybe forming a committee to maybe might probably not be an art asset that came in some sort of a pre-created pack.
Perhaps. But Josh.
But on the other hand, they could also just be the Nekis we know and love.
Yes, and we are led to believe they are the Nekis we know and love because of their weapon of choice, because they drop coconuts on your barrels. And we know one thing about Nekis is they love spitting their nuts.
Right.
So, yeah, the Nekis will fly overhead and they will drop coconuts on the RCB. And, When I finally got to level 3, which took me quite a long time, I think level 3 might have been as far as I ever got in 2003, but what a high note to go out on for 7 years, because I was like, oh my god, they actually have Nekis in this game, which wasn't a deep cut at the time. Like, I would say it's a deeper cut now because of just the weird journey Donkey Kong's been on as a property since 2010, but it was still something I appreciated to see back then. You know, like, even then, you know, a year into the buyout, it was always nice to see things referenced.
Right.
After that,
but yeah, the Nekis do also sort of screw you up in a secondary way, in that as they fly overhead, they cast, not only do their character models like block your perspective, and again, the isometric perspective already makes this game very finicky and very difficult to like keep track of what the cliffs are. The Nekis also cast shadows onto the world.
Yeah.
So that can make navigation, the combination of their character model and their shadows can make just basic navigation even harder than it already is.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like the Nekis. I don't dread the Nekis as much as I dread the boulders, which are one of the more reoccurring obstacles. I'm loath to call them baddies because they're just environmental hazards. but environmental hazards with agency. Let's say boulders
they do appear to have agency. Yeah.
Boulders appear in levels 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and 10. And, they basically just try to roll into the RCB, but it seems like they purposely chase it as well.
Yeah, we say they have agency because some of them, not all of them, some of them are just rolling around, all willy-nilly. Some of them do not appear to activate or even start to move at all until the RCB gets close to them, at which point they will seemingly hone in on it in a not dissimilar way to the way that the Kremling remote control barrel does.
Yeah. Which, you know, boulders are an archetype. I think Indiana Jones, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, just made the notion of a rolling boulder chasing you just... like part and parcel with any genre fiction. Oh, we're in the jungle. We're in a tomb. We're in a ancient shrine. Here comes the boulder. Here comes the boulder. Like Mario Party did it, you know. So that's right. That's all well and good, but what a lot of boulders! Like, what is going on here that there are so many boulders, and why is the ground so unstable that these boulders continually roll without any seeming mechanism to get them going? It's like a perpetual motion machine, these boulders. I don't understand it. I don't understand how this works.
Well, I would theorize that perhaps this game's depiction of events, more like all video, like all DKU games, to some extent, you need to make some sort of an allowance that these are video gamified depictions of events that actually happened in the DKU. But this one in particular, you really need to do that. So I would theorize that while the ground that we see in this gamified version does appear to be composed primarily of shapes of just a few angles, in the real actual adventure that really happened on DK Island, the ground was, of course, not made up of these isometric bricks.
Hmm.
And that explains why the boulders were able to move in a more realistic way.
So what you're saying, Josh, is that Gary Kitchen and David Crane, they paid off Rare's own spy to the Rare Archipelago. Now, for those who don't know the lore behind this, Rare in-universe has an explorer that they send to the Rare Archipelago to spy and catalog and basically write down the events of what's happening there. His name is Horace St. James Golightly. And this was established in Viva Pinata, but it explains in-universe why there are video games for all of these characters and why in the video games they know they are in video games. So you're saying that Gary Kitchen, David Crane were able to hire Horace St. James Golightly to catalog the events in the life of Donkey Kong's day when he took out the RCB, and then Golightly came back to Candyland HQ, Skyworks Technologies, and said, "This is what I found." And then
they
kind of exaggerated what was depicted.
Well, I don't know if you'd say exaggerated or not. Mm. By the way, the one correction I would make is I believe that Golightly contacted them.
Okay.
Right? I think that they made the contract with Nintendo, and then Golightly contacted them and said, "Well, I heard through my connections that you're making a Donkey Kong game. We need to strive for historical accuracy. So here's some ideas of what it could be about." And that's what they went with. But yeah, I wouldn't say so much exaggerated, though, as much as gamified the concept.
Or maybe Nintendo's told them that the one condition of them making a game is they had to first talk to Golightly. Like, you have to go through him before you can make a Donkey Kong game.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Okay, I could see that, although I am hesitant to say that what is depicted in Barrel Maze strays too far from the actual reality. It could just be that the ground was incredibly unstable in that part of the Congo jungle, much in the same way that the ground was unstable underneath our feet in 2003 as the video game industry shifted around us.
Yes, but much in the same way, this may be a sort of metaphorical mind palacing of the events.
Yes,
but that
yes.
But that is true. This the terrain in this game does represent, and this game itself does represent very well how it felt to be a Donkey Kong fan in 2003.
That's right. That's right. We didn't know what the future entailed. We didn't know that the future of Donkey Kong Country as a brand was inherently secure. Just like we wouldn't know that Retro Studios would be developing Donkey Kong Country Returns for release in 2010, which brings us to the next baddie in the game, Josh. Now, these are Venus flytraps that appear in levels 5 and 8. And if you get too close to them, they will take a bite out of the RCB. Now, what's so interesting about these? And what makes Donkey Kong lore such a damn treat to discuss is how closely these Venus flytraps adhere to the look of the Venus flytraps that would be introduced by Retro in Donkey Kong Country Returns. So Retro introduced a variety of Venus flytrap that would become the native Venus flytrap of Donkey Kong Island, sort of the Donkey Kong take on the piranha plant. And these would be called chomp plants, not to be confused with Chomps the Shark from Donkey Kong Country. Chomps the Shark is presumably named after the chomp plant in universe, or maybe vice versa. But these chomp plants, they look like a more detailed, more rugged version of the piranha plant. They kind of have like toothy mouths, yes, but they look, I think, more like plants. They're more like covered in leaves, and they look a little bit like the plant from Little Shop of Horrors mixed with a piranha plant, I guess. These. I'm just going to call them chomp plants in Barrel Maze. They kind of look like purple versions of the plants seen in Returns and Tropical Freeze and other games that utilize the Retro aesthetics. And I think we can say that through retroactive continuity, this would make Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze the very first appearance of the chomp plant.
Yeah, honestly, so I don't believe to my knowledge that I ever made it to level 5. but I will say, if you're watching this on YouTube, these chomp plants dominate the left hand side of the episode art of this episode. And I was looking at this art for some time throughout most of this episode before it really occurred to me, like, wait a minute, I've seen those things before. Like, they did not look in any way, shape, or form out of place with what I expected of Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is kind of one of those accidental continuity things that, of course, Retro did not play Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. I mean, maybe. Because they say they played every Donkey Kong Country and Land game in preparation for Returns. And they were also inspired by Banjo-Kazooie, oddly enough. But I don't think they were including Barrel Maze in that. Maybe they were. And maybe they said, you know those Venus flytraps from levels 5 and 8? What if we make those baddies in the game? Maybe that's actually what happened. But I usually chalk this stuff up to just a happy accident. That, oh, like you said, maybe these were devised from the ground up by Skyworks Technology. Maybe these are pre-existing art assets that they just plopped in the game. I don't know. But they look quite a bit like the plants that would appear in Donkey Kong Country Returns onward. And it's just one of those things that you just link up and you're like, oh, you know what? It works. It looks like this was all planned out by one mastermind. And that's what makes being a Dokyung fan so fun to me, is like, we're the only ones really paying attention to all of these fine details, you know, across all these separate disparate studios across the years. But when you can make this connection and say, well, actually, Chomplants first appeared in 2003's Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, then that's what makes me sleep well at night.
People will look at you like you're a very reasonable, normal person.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And
Freezer in the Stream Chat points out that these plants also resemble the plants from off of Crash Bandicoot. So the strange bedfellows connection never ends.
Yeah, yeah. Donkey Kong Freedom and the art assets that were repurposed for that in Crash. And yeah. The only other baddie, one can arguably, like, again, this is more of an obstacle, like the boulder, and gravity. Gravity's a big time obstacle in this game.
Gravity is an obstacle. Our Mavity.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've seen the most recent Doctor Who.
Yeah. It's, the coconut tree from level 5. And similar to driving off course in DK's Jungle Parkway, You roll into this coconut tree and a damn coconut will fall on your barrel, the RCB, and damage it. So you don't want to roll into the coconut tree. You don't want to do it.
Yeah, I will say that one of the reasons that I think that, as I said earlier, this game doesn't seem to break too far from the established Donkey Kong Country aesthetic is because whether it was, and let's be real, most of the assets in this game probably are from pre-existing art assets. But nonetheless, the ones that they chose for it, the textures that they chose for it, and especially these coconut trees, they have that same sort of rare era DKC rendered aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking like that.
It works quite well.
There's that kind of plasticky, kind of rounded look to the palm trees, right, to this coconut tree in particular, that I really do have such a deep fondness for, that realistic but artificial due to its time look,
right,
of those trees. And you know, I'm fine with the look of the
retro. They don't look realistic, but they look like 1994's best shot at being realistic.
Exactly. And I'm fine with the way the trees of the jungle look in retro's games and how they're looking going forward, but this will always be the sweet spot for me just because it hits that nostalgia center of my brain. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the stuff right there.
That's what I want a video game tree to look like. Because, yeah, I've talked about this in my videos before, that this really was, I mean, obviously we're talking about 2003 here. Yeah. The Game Boy Advance sort of extended this a little bit. But there really was this very small window of time in the late 4th, 5th, and I would say early, very, very early 6th gens, where this sort of pre-rendered look was in vogue. Like, video games before that point couldn't have looked like that, and video games after that point were too good at rendering an engine to look like this. So yeah, this is just so representative of such a very specific time in the history of gaming.
And because this was used to promote the remake of the original Donkey Kong Country, it kind of fits.
Of course, yeah.
It kind of works as this last gasp of the plasticky palm trees. So yeah. I don't know, like, I really do like the look of this game. Even the, like, squared off, like, platforms and stuff that would normally put me off, I think because of the textures they used on the sides of it, it's, like, if you squint, it reads like, this, you could encounter this in nature, maybe, I don't know, you have to really squint.
You can encounter extremely rectangular natural terrain. I don't know.
That's why this section of the Congo jungle is so dangerous, Josh. That's why you have to be airlifted in and out, because there's just no way to navigate safely this extremely squared off rectangular terrain.
And that's why they're using the remote control barrel. It's for their own safety.
But it's so lousy with bananas because the soil, the rectangular soil, is so rich with nutrients. The rectangles just feed the banana trees so much.
And that's why the bananas are laying on the ground in like these ridiculously gigantic bunches. They have fallen off of the trees, which we mostly do not see, that cover the canopy.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. You got it. And speaking of the banana bunches, let's talk or recap really quickly what the collectibles in this game are and exactly what they do for you. Because the banana bunches, we're factoring those in as the main drivers of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can get through this entire game without collecting banana bunches just fine. And Donkey Kong will just have the banana bunches at the end of the level. I always tried to collect the banana bunches because, to me, that always serviced the plot more than the other things. But the banana bunches also restore the damage meter on the RCB. So if you do take damage, the banana bunches will replenish that banana meter. And, right. You know, I guess the RCB is powered by bananas, like a lot of things on Donkey Kong Island. So I guess
that would seem to make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do always love that retroactive continuity. Haha. Retroactive from the Retro Studios games that establishes that the bananas have magical properties. They have there's all this like sort of indirectly communicated lore and history with them. And that's it's not just a matter of K. Rool wanting the bananas, but for the sake of them being bananas.
Yeah, yeah. There's like alchemy that can be done with bananas, as shown by the Tiki Tech tribe. So the bananas also get you 250 points, which who cares? there are also two types of treasure that one can find. Silver barrels, which can get you 1,000 points, and the gold barrel, which is the pinnacle of treasure in this game. Gold barrels net you 2,000 points. And
so
do
you have any idea what the silver and gold barrels might represent in lore? Because this is more your purview.
Absolutely, Josh. I'm glad you said that. I am
not surprised.
The silver and gold barrels, in my best estimation, are probably ancient Tiki Tak tribe artifacts. Because we know that the golden bananas, which were first seen in Mario Party, but were then explored more fully in Donkey Kong 64, we ultimately learned that there was a prime golden banana that could warp you to Tiki Tong's home dimension. It was housed in the Golden Temple, and all the smaller golden bananas that comprise Donkey Kong's golden banana hoard seen in Donkey Kong 64, which he discovered in Mario Party, those were made in homage to the prime golden banana, this gateway, if you will, to this dimension where this ancient god originated, that the Kongs worshipped at one point, took their name from, derived Kong from Tong. And, of course, mm-hmm. then things went south with them. But anyway, so I think that this is just another Tiki Tak tribe artifact. So much of Kong culture and society is derived from the early Tiki Tak tribe, including their affinity for barrels, right? When the Tiki Tak tribe returned, they housed their spirits in barrels and bongos and what have you. So it makes sense that there would be these golden and silver reliefs of barrels, and they would just still be found throughout the jungle. And yeah, I'm sure Donkey Kong's going to collect them. Maybe he's there for the bananas, but if he can nab a little bit of treasure along the way, well, hey, that's a bonus.
Yeah, and also this could be the earliest signs that the Kongs, and therefore the audience, would have had of the Tiki Tak tribe. Retroactively, we can see this as a hint toward their existence. and what was coming in 2010.
Yeah, I would say the Golden Bananas from 1999, the
right.
Silver and Gold Barrels from 2003, and of course, the DK Bongos, which debuted in 2004, which my theory there is that the DK Bongos, which washed up on the beach of DK Island, they were an ancient Tiki Tak tribe device. And by utilizing the DK Bongos in Donkey Konga and Donkey Konga 2, Donkey Konga 3 if you're in Japan, and Donkey Kong's final smash in Brawl, that actually had the effect of waking up the Tiki Tak tribe in the dormant volcano in Donkey Konga Island. And they eventually gained enough power and resurrected in 2010. So,
see, all the signs were there. That's the thing that's kind of frustrating to look back on this, because the buyout era, there was so much hand wringing, there was so much teeth gnashing, there was so much consternation over the future of Donkey Kong. But if we could have just put, like, all the signs were there, and if somebody had just been able to thread that needle and put it all together, we would have known. We would have known that everything was going to be okay. Everything was going to work out.
It was a masterful 11-year plan.
It was.
Yeah.
It truly was.
The Hourglass, which adds 30 seconds of additional power to the RCB, and therefore your overall time for a level, these are essential to get into later levels. You have to immediately seek out the Hourglasses. They also get you 250 points, but who cares? I don't know. This is a weird collectible because, like, an hourglass is such an atypical Donkey Kong collectible. Like, silver and gold barrels, banana bunches, sure. Sure.
Balloons with characters' faces on them?
Hourglasses, though, like, I would accept an anthropomorphic stopwatch. Right?
Sure.
And the stopwatches that you got from the sheepy shop in Donkey Kong Land 3, but an hourglass, I don't know, Josh. I assume this is also an ancient Tiki Tak tribe device. They used hourglasses. I don't know. Who cares?
I like how you will go to great lengths to explain the silver and gold barrels. But the hourglasses, you're just like, you know, it's a video game.
I have my limits.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, I could talk for hours about the silver and gold barrels and explain to you exactly why they would have made them. But then, you know, we get to the hourglass and I've just lost patience.
Because, yeah, you're right. Because we said earlier the bananas seem to protect the RCB, okay?
Yeah.
We said earlier that the RCB ran on the power of the bananas. But, in fact, it does just restore their damage meter. You theorized earlier in the episode that the timer represents the battery power of the RCB, and the hourglasses restore that power. So the RCB appears to have two different functions, one protective with the bananas, one battery powered, or whatever it's running on, the hourglasses restore it.
I guess it's running on sand. I don't know.
It's running on sand. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So
maybe this is another thing that we should earmark for the follow up episode, where we figure out if Donkey or Diddy Kong was in fact controlling the RCB in each level.
We need some sort of inanimate object version of the character witness, where we can really get into the mechanics, like the blueprints of the RCB, and really like crack open how it works.
And that episode will begin at 3 a.m.
Just because I could think of no better way to greet the rising sun than wrapping up the blueprint, the Funky's Workshop : RCB episode of the conversation. So
sure.
We are not, I am sorry to say, going to go through each and every level of this game and tell you exactly how it's laid out. The most we were going to do is tell you which baddies, which obstacles appear in each one, because quite frankly, I don't think we can really do this justice. Well, not that we can't do it justice. I don't think there's enough interesting discussion to be had recapping each and every level. It's kind of one of those things where you just have to see it for yourself to properly understand it. A 2D side-scrolling game, a 3D platforming game, yes, I can talk to you in depth about every level, about every world. In a weird isometric obstacle course shockwave game.
Audio alone cannot capture or communicate the brilliance and the depth of the level design in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. You're just going to have to find a way to play it yourself.
I was going to use the term majesty.
Majesty. That's good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about that, but I do want to talk a little bit about how this game, coupled with Mario Kart Double Dash, really did break me in 2003. You know, because up until that point, I had made it a habit, a religion, if you will, here at Midnight Mass, talking the Donkey Kong universe. I would beat every DKU game, 100% complete it, you know, from beginning to end, as they came out, as they were relatively new. Sometimes it would take me a couple months, you know, because I would also...
Sometimes you needed time travel, but you did do it.
Yeah, yeah. I would savor it, you know. I would make the most of it, but it would still be within that window of when the game was new. And right. It was Double Dash that really... I just couldn't at the time. It really did, like, ruin me. And I tried to play Barrel Maze, and maybe because my heart wasn't in it because of what happened with Double Dash. And I was like, I can't move on to Barrel Maze. I haven't beat Double Dash. But
right.
Also, this game was brutally difficult, and it was extremely sensitive in a very unrefined way that I wasn't accustomed to. Because I was used to the polish of Rare and Nintendo. And so to be in this unseemly terrain of shockwave games on Lifesaver websites,
which is an accurate description of how it feels to play Double Dash, but we've moved on to talking about Barrel Maze again.
So, like, really, like, where my greatest concern was is I don't want this game to go away. I don't want it to disappear before I have a chance to properly sit down and defeat it. And once we preserved it, once we knew it was going to be safe for the future, I basically just put it out of my mind. And when I went back and I decided, you know, I'm reinvested in DK Vine, I'm reinvested in the Donkey Kong universe, I want to experience all these games that I missed over the last 7 years or so, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze was one of the first I got back to. After I beat Double Dash, and what an event that was for me. What a sweaty mess I was. I went back to Barrel Maze. Just to show you how quaint I was, I had burned it on a CDR and, pulled it up, and I was like, all right, Barrel Maze, let's do it. And I chronicled this on the DK Vine forum back then as part of the Slush Fund. And it took me a couple of days, but it didn't take me long at all. I was surprised at how quickly I got through it in 2010. And I think it's because, one, my heart was in it this time around. And two, as I said, it kind of paled compared to Double Dash. And defeating, like, the all-cup mode with Donkey and Diddy and the DK Jumbo. So this was just flicking an arrow key on my keyboard until I was well acquainted with each level enough that I could do it. And I have to say, like, ordinarily this would have pissed me off how cheap the ending to this was. I can't think of a worse ending than a DKU except for Donkey Kong Land. Because Donkey Kong Land, of course, the ending to that game is you just get a message that says congratulations, and then the end credits.
Yeah, if I remember right, isn't it just congratulations, period? Like, you don't, it's not even an exclamation point.
It's not even worthy of the excitement of an exclamation right. point. It just, congratulations.
And then the credits roll.
And that was okay, because Donkey Kong Land, at the very least, was a whirlwind journey through Donkey Kong lore. I talk about the lore of Barrel Maze, but Donkey Kong Land gave us Kremlantis, Josh. It gave us Chimpanzee Clouds. It gave us Big Ape City and Hogwash and Nemo. Donkey Kong Land, I will defend to the end. I know Donkey Kong Land is flawed, but what a flawed experience. But Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, like, this has almost as poor an ending, where you just get the same as the title screen, except it now says, congratulations, this time with an exclamation mark. It says, congratulations, you finished all the levels.
Yeah, it's also the same as the level, as each level result screen, with Donkey Kong sort of appearing to stand on top of the HUD.
Yeah.
While Cranky and Diddy are doing their motion tweening flash animations on either side of the logo.
Yeah, yeah. So it's congratulations, you finished all the levels.
Oh, it is an exclamation point this time, though, as you said.
All right.
You finished all the levels doesn't appear to have any punctuation, though, so I don't know how to take that one.
Okay, let me try that again. I have to get it accurate, Josh, all right?
Right.
Congratulations! You finished all the levels? Now, that's a question mark. Congratulations! You finished all the levels! Yeah, it's just cut off, because there's no punctuation at all. So you think they're going to say more, and then it just never comes. Congratulations! You finished all the levels!
Now, each word of "you finished all the levels" is capitalized, I notice, suggesting that they are all in some way a proper noun. So "you," of course, that's the beginning of the sentence, though, finished, I guess in terms of finishing a video game, maybe that makes sense. And then "all the levels," I would say that's, that perhaps that's the name of the world in Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, is the "all the levels" region of DK Island.
All the levels. Sorry, let me try this one more time. Congratulations! You finished all the levels! That's as good as I can get.
You sound like one of those, like, 1970s speech-to-text devices.
For all we know, that's what they used to make this game. So, this would have pissed me off. Like, not even a unique in-game animation of, like, Donkey Kong's model or anything. But my hands were so sweaty that I would say, coming off of the dual victory of defeating Double Dash and finally defeating Barrel Maze, these two basically hippos on my back, you know?
The games that had broken you 7 years earlier, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the glistening hippos on my back. I finally got them off my back, and this was so glorious. Such a victory for me. Two victories in such a short time, that this ending was almost as beautiful as Donkey Kong Country 2's was. Like, I would put this in my top 20 endings in video games, just because of what this represented for me, finally putting old demons to rest. So.
And I appreciate you saying that. As somebody who is typically very gameplay-driven myself, I know what you mean by that. It doesn't really matter so much what the ending is, per se. What matters is, how difficult was it to get there?
Yeah.
And that's what makes for the most memorable endings to me. So yeah. I know exactly what you mean by, even this, because of what it meant to you, because of how long it took, because of the struggle and strife that you went through to achieve it, even this can hit you in a not dissimilar way to that iconic scene at the end of Donkey Kong Country 2.
But still, like, he could have brought the bananas back to his banana horn and done his little victory thing there. Like, that would have been apropos. Like, they could have just... Oh, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, Josh.
They did not expect anyone to ever actually beat this.
Yeah. I mean, I somebody else beat this out there besides me. So...
I will go back and give it a shot after this episode. I'll see what I can do.
I know somebody else has at least beaten it because Mario Wiki has an article about it. And they seem to know what they're talking about. So I'm going to trust at least two people in this world have beaten Barrel Maze. Now, implausibly, we have some calls, Josh, about Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. Just a reminder, if you would like to call...
the 37 calls? What the hell?
It's actually going to be Gary Kitchen and David Crane calling in. No, we have two calls. Maybe it's Gary Kitchen and David Crane. But if you would like to call the conversation, you can give us a call at any time via the DK Vine hotline. That's 1-202-630-VINE, 8463. Call, you know, we announce an episode usually a day before, sometimes 2 days before, sometimes the day of, but... We like, this is the topic at hand, right? And we're soliciting calls, and you can call in then and give us your thoughts. But it's also open all the time. You can call in whenever you want. We can't promise we'll get to your thoughts if they're not relevant to the topic at hand. But, you know, we sometimes pull them out for the call sack. And so feel free. The line's always open. You don't have to talk to anybody. I'm not going to pick up and go boo and scare you. I have that option. I'm not going to exercise it, but I could, but I'm not going to, so don't worry. Josh, should we go ahead and play this first call?
Yeah, but I will say real quick, one thing that I've seen people kind of fret about a little bit, and that I'd like to reassure potential callers to the DK Vine hotline, is that if you call in and you feel like you didn't have, like, you know, I know talking off the cuff can be difficult and be a bit scary, especially when you are just, I mean, I've called the hotline myself before. If you call in and then you decide that you don't, that you didn't really depict what you wanted to say as well, and you call back and say, and give it a second shot, Heil will not play your original call. Heil.
No.
We are not going to make fun of our listeners.
No, this isn't gotcha podcasting here. I'm not looking to humiliate people. Like I said in the last episode, I'm all about spreading the good vibes if I can, and I'm all just about...
I know lots of people have a fear of speaking on the phone.
Josh, I hate it. I cannot leave a message because I ramble and I can't get to my point if I don't have somebody to talk to on the other end. And it's just the most impersonal, cold feeling in the world. So if you would like to feel that, please call the DK Vine hotline at 1-202-630-VINE. All right, let's go ahead and play that first call.
Hello, Josh. Hello, Heil. This is Carl Nax. I'm so glad. I'm so privileged to be calling into this this midnight mass to celebrate the object of our faith, Donkey Kong Barrel Maze, released in 2003. For all good PC platforms. You see, Barrel Maze, it serves the role of a savior in our lives. Released in 2003, just mere months after the buyout of Rare by Microsoft in September of 2002, the dark time was an uncertain time. We felt more disconnected from our spiritual experience with Donkey Kong than ever before. But Barrel Maze came to deliver us. It gave us the security of knowing what Donkey Kong is all about. It's about barrels, it's about collecting bananas, and it's about seeing PNGs of our favorite Donkey Kong characters when we clear the level. And this salvation that came to us in an unexpected guise. And Skyworks Interactive, an unknown video game publisher, they make mobile games, they make games for handhelds, or at least they did. But you know, all great religious teachers, they came from humble origins. They were not expected to change the very world. Jesus of Nazareth, brother, only a humble carpenter, Muhammad, who was only a traitor within the Arabian Peninsula, Buddha was a prince sheltered from the world until they made their mark on the world. And Skyworks Technologies, Skyworks Interactive, they made their mark with Beryl Mays. Praise be. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Well, thank you for just making sure you checked as many sacrilegious boxes as you could for your call. I appreciate that we...
I liked that he brought a more fundamentalist bend to this midnight mass. I don't know what he was making it more religious, in my opinion.
It's the first time I'm sure Gary Kitchen and David Crane have ever been compared to Buddha. So they should feel good about
deservedly
what
so though.
Yeah. I don't think Boardwalk Baltos would have elicited that response, but the fact that they made a Donkey Kong game gives them that pedestal to be hoisted upon. Thank you for the call. Let's go ahead and take the next call before the boycotts for this episode and the conversation and the Geek Critique fully begin.
Hey, DK Dine, it's Poryon Q here, calling in about the episode for Donkey Kong Country Barrel Blast, or Barrel Maze. Crap, messed that up. Anyway, I think this game is pretty cool. I personally haven't played it, and I intend to eventually. I'm way too busy right now. But one thing I do kind of want to talk about is the form that it's in, like the type of game that it is. Specifically that it's like a quick, easy flash game. Not quick and easy, but it's a flash game you play on your computer. And I know that may seem like a weird thing to point out, but I think that's a type of game that in many ways is sort of not given the respect it deserves. Maybe this is just because I grew up in the 2000s and 2010s when we all had laptops in school and we spent all our free time playing cool math games. But those sorts of games, like, have a lot of players. Like, that's a specific type of game that's sort of low budget, low value, not low value, but like low priority type of game. It has such a unique feel to it. It's just such a cool vibe and sort of energy that a flash game like that has. Like, the sort of thing you see on Newgrounds, and this, I believe, is Shockwave, but the sort of thing you see on, like, cool-ass games, you know, like a Run 2 or, like, a Blue Power Defense sort of game. It's just such a specific energy that it feels like it's almost gone from the industry anymore. And it's such a shame. And, like, I know Barrel Maze is not, like, the biggest game of all time. It's not, like, it's the most grandiose Donkey Kong game ever made. It maybe is the most grandiose Donkey Kong game ever made. But I still think this is a really cool game. I'm so happy that DKU has a game like it, a game of that sort of feeling, of that sort of flavor. It just really shows how big and diverse the DKU really is.
Well, thank you for the call, Porygon Q. I was like, oh my god, somebody who played Barrel Maze. And then they said they didn't play Barrel Maze.
They didn't have time. Porygon Q, who was in the chat at the beginning of this episode, but has likely fallen asleep by now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, some people have to sleep, so they can't play Barrel Maze. Other people have to stay up all night to podcast about Barrel Maze. Sure. I'm also glad you were the first.
Kyle, did you know that Porygon is, in fact, a Pokemon?
You're blowing my mind. Actually, I did know that, so...
I figured.
Yeah. I am also glad that Porygon was the first to make the malapropism of calling this game... Barrel Blast, because I was afraid I was going to be doing that relentlessly throughout this episode, and thus far have avoided making that mistake. Just because, of course, Donkey Kong Barrel Blast is the more well-known Donkey Kong game. Quality, maybe on par with Barrel Maze, no.
Maybe. I was going to say it helps if you use its full Christian title, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, because, of course, Barrel Blast is just Donkey Kong Barrel Blast.
Yes.
By including the country in there, it's easier to keep them straight.
It's funny how so many people forget about the country in these games. Like, a lot of people outside the fandom will call Donkey Kong Country 2 Donkey Kong 2. Or Donkey Kong Country 3 Donkey Kong 3. Really? Yeah, they'll just gloss over that. I know, like, it's super Donkey Kong in Japan and what have you, but it just, I don't know. I feel like for me, Donkey Kong Country is such an important part of the branding that whenever it's included, I can't help but use it. So,
well, also because if somebody said Donkey Kong 2, my mind would go to Donkey Kong Jr. The game, not the character.
Right.
Because that was followed by Donkey Kong 3, starring Stanley the Bugman.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I agree, Porygon. Like, I'm glad this exists. It is, like, a snapshot in time, a very particular time. But it is something that I think makes the DKU more interesting, makes the Donkey Kong series vastly more interesting just by existing. Like, we can debate its actual quality all the live long day or very late night or very early morning. But, sure, like, there's no question in my mind, like, I'm happy this exists.
Oh, yeah, me too, for sure. Like I was saying at the top of the episode, it's, and in line with what Porygon was saying, it's neat that the DKU and the Donkey Kong brand in general would get a game that is such a snapshot of a very particular era of gaming history and internet history, because you would not, even though, you know, as we've been saying, and as Freezer says in the chat, mobile games sort of filled this a similar role until they discovered microtransactions and then they went all in on that. The next Donkey Kong Country game, or the next Donkey Kong game, whatever form it takes, I do not expect will get any sort of, like, a side game mobile tie-in like this. This only could have happened between the years of about, really, 2000 to, I would say, 2005. Even any point after that, and it would have been a little long in the tooth for a Shockwave tie-in game to come out.
Josh, I have to ask, did Sonic ever have something comparable?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
What? I go to you.
Sonic had so... Look, not even I can encapsulate the entire history of Sonic. Sonic had Japan-only, mobile-only games that only worked with specific phones. There were things called, like, Sonic Golf that came out for mobile devices in Japan only. Probably the most well-known Sonic-related thing that comes to mind, though, was not actually anything official. There was a Flash game called Ultimate Flash Sonic, which is actually of a very similar era and a very similar vintage of Barrel Maze. It was based primarily using the sprite work of the Sonic Advance games, and it was pretty good and pretty competent for a fan-made Flash game of the time. I remember playing it for probably about 5 minutes and being like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. And then, like, 10 years later, you saw this horde of people for whom this was the first Sonic game they ever played. Alas, Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze has not had a similar nostalgia bomb.
No, until now.
Until now. Yeah. I mean, here we are.
Yeah, we're lighting the fuse. You know, I do make fun of this game a little bit, but it's always good-natured. Like, I make fun of it because I feel like I can, because I'm part of the family that also cherishes this game. I don't want anybody else outside the fandom making fun of it. Don't you dare.
Nobody else outside of the fandom knows that it exists. They're not going to. You don't have anything to worry about.
They don't know it exists, and I adore that it exists. So, there you go. Like, I have a soft spot for any game that exists in the periphery of a franchise, like on the bubble of basically not even existing at all. You know, a secret that's only known or remembered by the utmost faithful. Like, that's the kind of stuff that really gets my juices flowing, just like the juices on the back of those hippos. And, you know, the mobile games of today can come and go. You know, they can appear and then they can be delisted and then maybe gone forever. And you got those, like, 99 games, like Blank 99, like on the Switch.
Right.
That can be really popular, and then they make a big splash, and then Nintendo's just like, well, it's gone. And then the
pour game... Pour one out for Mario 35.
And then we have something like Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, which is a game that's been preserved by us. We did it! And as far as those web browser games go, I would say, like, this is one of the more polished ones of this era. And whether or not the assets are original or not, we can debate, but at the very least, it looks fresh, if you'll allow the parlance, for Donkey Kong. It looks like it's a new Donkey Kong experience, with a few reused renders here or there. You know, Barrel Maze has often been a game debated in our fandom over whether or not it should actually count as a game. Like, why do we venerate this with an official canonical or phenomenal, if you will, status, and not all of those Flash-based games that appeared on the official game websites or Nintendo.com? Like, what puts Barrel Maze above those? And, you know, part of the initial reason was that, yeah, it felt like a fully fleshed out real game on a platform with, I guess, a bit more respectability, like CandyStand.com. I realize that's a laugh, but bear with me here.
Candy. Oh, yeah. You know, I always say a game's not really a game if it's not on CandyStand.com.
You know, because a lot of those Flash games on Nintendo.com or on the respective websites for the games, they were just, you know, renders getting shifted around the screen. You had some innate mouse clicking, but there wasn't a whole lot to them. And Barrel Maze felt like an actual fleshed out game.
So you're saying there's like a specificity to it?
Yes, yes. And maybe this is like getting deep in the weeds, and this is a philosophical debate for another day. Like, yes, maybe we need to have another conversation about whether other games of this ilk, like Lunchables, Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, Aerial Challenge, should count as an actual DKU game. Like, why does Barrel Maze rank when Lunchables, Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, Aerial Challenge does not?
I'll say this. There are worse games published for the Game Boy Advance than Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze.
That's right.
So if you want to judge the quote-unquote real game authenticity of it based on that, I've played worse. I've played so much worse.
Yeah, and whether or not you view any intrinsic value in the gameplay of Barrel Maze, whether or not you think, you know, we're favoring this game over the likes of Lunchables, Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, Aerial Challenge, that shouldn't diminish Barrel Maze's unique, charming place in the history of Donkey Kong. And I would argue its role in the canon of the Donkey Kong universe. It's a wholly unique thing, and it is set apart from all these other Flash-based games. And that's why we're sitting here 20 years later talking about it. And yeah, we might be the only ones, you know, that's okay. That's our purpose. That's DK Vine's purpose, is to revel in the obscure, in the arcane, you know, to dust things off and show people, hey, this existed. Hey, there's this connection.
No, I was so thrilled. I was so thrilled when you pulled me for this episode specifically, because it's like, if we don't, who will?
I have to be honest, Josh. I asked around the staff, the DK Vine staff, and nobody was really interested. And you and I have a lot of the same wiring in our brains where we are just fascinated by games and game series and pop culture in the broader sense, but even if we can't like actually connect with a property, just the very existence of something can really get our brain turning over and get us excited. Mm-hmm. Just like putting ourselves in the shoes of a fan of something or imagining how we would react to something existing in our wheelhouse. And so just your love of weirdness like this, I was like, you know, this would be a good pull for Josh. Like, I had Josh earmarked for another episode that I had like been kicking around for maybe late in the conversation season. And I was like, mm-hmm. actually, Josh on the spotlight episode for Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze would be a good use of his talents. And we can kick that episode to season 12, like the other episode sure. I had planned for him. So thank you for being here and thank you for doing it. You know, this came up earlier. Like, could you do Barrel Maze today? Like, in a more polished format, of course. But, like, I think you could. I think this would be a fun little concept for a game if you revived it for the mobile platform or, you know, I don't know, maybe even a mini game kind of thing in a larger Donkey Kong game. Like, sure, polish up the controls. Mm-hmm. Please polish up the controls. But, you know, I think maybe if you could actually control it with a control stick or a D-pad, or you had a little bit more kinetic level design, I think it would be a fun experience. Like, this is one of those things like It's Mr. Pants where I look back and I'm like, this could work even today with just a little bit of refinement, a little bit of retooling, and a little bit of recontextualization of the platform it's on. And
well, the word little bit is doing a lot of work there.
Okay, but I'm a dreamer. I can sure. imagine.
No, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm saying it would take more than a little bit, but it could. But I do agree it could work.
Obviously, Skyworks is seemingly defunct. And I very much doubt Nintendo themselves would say, hey, you remember Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze? But I don't know, something like it would work. And you know, it probably will never happen, and that's fine. That's fine, because we have this, Josh. Like Porygon's point in their call, it's kind of remarkable we have this at all, because I always look back at things that were very much of their time, and I lament that we didn't get a DKU entry for it. And I might be the only one in some of these situations. Because to the layperson, it's probably a good thing that we never got a DKU Tiger Electronics handheld.
You bring that up. That is bizarre that we didn't, given the timing.
Well,
those things were everywhere and would continue to be everywhere for quite some time.
They were, but I also think Nintendo was a lot more protective. I mean, Nintendo had their own version with the Game & Watch. Like,
True.
And then they had the Game Boy and saw no need for the Game & Watch. But, you know, the Tiger Electronic LCD handhelds, very cheap, very tacky. The closest we got to a DKU equivalent was the Battletoads tie-in they did. This was, of course, predating the DKU, predating Battletoads 2020, all the variants, integration of the Battletoads in Rare Shared Universe post-1994. But, yeah, we never got a Donkey Kong Tiger Electronics game. And we never got anything DKU-wise, considering Rare's relationship with Nintendo, while these things were still fairly lucrative.
Yeah, I believe, if I remember right, the last Game & Watch, I think, came out in 1991. So, yeah, DKC would have just missed the boat by a few years on those.
Yeah, and by the time Rare was under the auspices of Microsoft, these things... Were these things even still being made? I don't even know.
The latest I remember Tiger Electronics being made was like 99, 2000. I know, for example, Sonic Adventure, which came out in the US in 1999, it got a I believe that's the last Sonic game that got a Tiger Electronics related sort of game.
I'm waiting on the Let's Play of you playing that, Josh.
They're so rare and expensive. So it's like this little arcade cabinet, and it's actually quite a bit more involved than, I'm not saying it's good, but it's quite a bit more involved than your standard sort of, you know, two AA batteries, Tiger Electronics LCD handheld game. But no, those things are extremely, extremely hard to come by. Would love to play one, though.
But yeah, I look back at those things, and I saw the Sonic ones, you know, back in the day, and I just imagined, what if a Donkey Kong Country game came out as a Tiger Electronics LCD handheld? And like, I wouldn't enjoy that, but I kind of would enjoy that. I kind of would enjoy that. Like, I would definitely make a meal out of that. And
sure.
Just like to the average person on the street, it's a good thing that we never got the Donkey Kong game for the Virtual Boy. You know, Paul Makacek, Rare employee to this day, but one of the driving forces behind a lot of Rare's handheld output, the architect of Stop and Swap as well, was behind Donkey Kong Land and was fussing about with a Donkey Kong demo on the Virtual Boy at Rare, but it never came to an actual game because the Virtual Boy quickly collapsed. But
very quickly,
I look at the Virtual Boy and I'm like, I hate that there's not a Donkey Kong Country game on there or a Donkey Kong Land game on there. I would love that. And granted, I'm one of the few who like actually adores the Virtual Boy.
You're not alone.
I know. I wasn't excluding you. I was just saying that we are very similar in a lot of ways, Josh, and but I look at stuff like that and the Tiger Electronics thing and I'm like, I could have had a lot of fun having entries into DKU there. Like, think of all the lore I could squeeze out of a Tiger Electronics Donkey Kong game. Like, arguing about how these janky LCD animations of the Kongs fit into the grander timeline. Like, look what I've done with Barrel Maze, Josh. I've connected so many dots that Gary Kitchen and David Crane never, never intended to be connected. But I did it.
I know you said that we don't like blowing smoke up our own asses, but I commend us for playing it straight through most of this episode. There have been several times where I kind of broke a little bit about the incredulity of it all, but I think playing it straight was the right way to go here.
What do you mean? I'm deadly serious about this, Josh. I live and breathe the Donkey Kong universe, and I am proud to stand by Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, the browser game on candystand.com, now owned by Publishers Clearinghouse, that was a legitimate entry in the DKU and a vital piece to understanding the history of Donkey Kong Island and the Congo jungle.
Well, Heil, I gotta say, I never had to knock on wood, but I know someone who has.
Is that a ska reference?
This has been a File 2 production.
Que rico!
Congratulations! You finished all the podcasts!